Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Sunday, March the 7th, 2021. It's about 7:30 a.m. in Toronto, Canada. And I mention that because my guest this morning, or rather late afternoon, her time, is Virginia Latour-Jaeger in Dubai, who I have done numerous podcasts with over the years. And we have a very special topic today. First, let me welcome Virginia. How are you, Virginia, today?
John, I'm doing great. Doing very well, and I hope you are too.
I certainly am, and I'm really excited about the topic that we are going to talk about today because, you know, as tax bloggers, and I think as a sense, tax historians, if this stuff were read like 100 years ago, we are going to be talking about something that is without precedent in the United States and its possible application to the rest of the world. I'm talking specifically about Senator Warren's proposed wealth tax. And this may sound like a great idea for certain people in the United States, but my God, when you start taking this apart, understanding it, and seeing how far it goes and how it affects the lives of people outside the United States, you would be absolutely shocked. Would you agree with that as a preliminary assessment, Virginia?
Absolutely, John. It's frightening. Absolutely frightening.
So I hope that that people are either sitting down. If anybody is listening to this in your car while you're driving, I strongly suggest that you pull over. And yes, I will say at the beginning that we do confirm that the information is in this is correct. We are not making this up. Let's go right back to the beginning. As you know, there's a new administration in the United States, a Democrat administration, and we know that Senator Elizabeth Warren sought the nomination of the Democratic Party, and she did this largely on the basis of a proposed wealth tax. So, Virginia, talk to me a little bit about this proposed wealth tax idea.
Sure. Okay, so we have her draft proposal. And we can actually see the wording of the statute that she's proposing. And let's give some of the basics. The Ultra-Millionaire Tax Act of 2021 is the title of the act. And it calls for an annual, okay, every year, a wealth tax to be assessed on so-called applicable taxpayers. We'll get to who they are later. And it's a tax on their net worth. So net worth basically means everything you own in the world, whatever it is, assets, property, cash, boats, your pedigree dog, and so forth and so on, your jewelry, all of that minus your debts is your net worth. Now, the rate is 2% on net worth that's over $50 million, but under $1 billion. And once you get past $1 billion, the rate goes up to 3%. And again, this is every year you will be paying this wealth tax.
So this is really, really something. And this is something that I think our audience of Americans abroad will understand much better than homeland Americans. This is not an income tax at all. In other words, there's no realization of it. This is not about you're making a dollar and the government wanting to share in what you made. No, this is about the government saying, oh my God, look, you have something and we want to assess a tax based on your having it rather than income.
That's correct. And this is something the U.S. has never had. The U.S. does not have a wealth tax in place. And there's issues with the constitutionality of a wealth tax being imposed by the federal government. That's for another day. But this is a tax that is unknown to Americans.
Well, hold on. Is it unknown to Americans abroad? It seems to me that Americans abroad are constantly subjected to non-realization taxation, the whole subpart F regime, transition tax, GILTI, phantom capital gains, the 877A exit tax. So this is actually something that I think Americans abroad are much more likely to understand quickly than homeland Americans, because for them, they live this non-realization event taxation, right?
That's correct, John, they do. But even the non-realization events aren't viewed so much as a tax imposed on their wealth per se, if you understand what I'm trying
to say. They define them. In other words, what they do is they build a house and call it a shed. They define these things as income.
That's right.
That's it. You would agree, I think, that as a general principle, Americans abroad in the U.S. tax system would have more experience of the concept of being required to pay taxes when they never had any income.
Clearly they will. And many of them who are in European countries may in fact be paying a wealth tax to those European countries in which they are living. You know, a true wealth tax based on what they own, properties they own. So yes, they will certainly understand this concept far more than the homeland American. And the homeland American may look at these numbers and say, well, this doesn't apply to me and I don't care, and just close the book. Hopefully we will open some minds when we have our discussion today about this wealth tax.
Well, the exit tax, the 877A exit tax was passed, the late Senator Kennedy, bless his heart, called it the billionaire's tax. Virginia, this, in your experience, this 877A exit tax, is this a billionaire's tax?
Oh my gosh, no. It's frightening, John. It's frightening. This tax, this exit tax, this crazy billionaire's tax can hit people that have literally like $100,000 worth of assets. How? Because if they haven't been tax compliant and can't certify that they've been tax compliant for the 5 years prior to their giving up their citizenship, they are going to be subject to this exit tax. So they could be paupers, but still be subject to the exit tax and wiped out, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to take a very simple visual example, I mean, all it takes in the world I live in is for somebody to own a house in Toronto and have a pension from 30 years of work. I mean, you can't put together two nickels, you know, to buy a cup of coffee, but by God, you're rich.
Paying the wealthy. Exit tax, yes.
You're deserving of punishment by the United States. And know that this is not even on U.S. assets. But in any case, this $50 million, I mean, first of all, there's no indication in the statute that it's indexed to inflation, number one. Secondly, this threshold is once Congress gets a hold of this, they're going to bring it down, you know, by a certain amount every year. And, you know, when I wrote something up on this, I said that today it might apply to ultra-millionaires. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow will apply, what are by today's standards, 1,000 years.
That's right.
So,
that's
no, right. I mean, this is incredibly dangerous stuff, I think, both practically and philosophically. You know, Virginia, when I read this, and this is not how a homeland American, I think, would read this. When I read this, you tell me if you agree or disagree. This thing is written, you define it to apply to all individuals. Well, you know, there are individuals who live outside the United States. So it presumptively applies to everybody in the world.
That's
with
right,
a carve out for what they call non-resident, only in the sense, it doesn't mean the non-resident isn't subject to the wealth tax, but the non-resident is subject to the wealth tax only on U.S. assets, right?
Yes. Well, let's just clarify. That carve-out is for someone who is not a U.S. citizen and is also a non-resident. So your typical expat American abroad is not going to escape this wealth tax because he's a U.S. citizen. So you've got to meet both prongs. You've got to be not a non-U.S. citizen and also non-resident of the U.S., okay, for this little carve-out to apply. And the carve-out said, in order to determine whether you are subject to the wealth tax meeting the $50 million threshold, that we look only at your U.S. situs assets. So that's another issue, what is treated as being a U.S. situs asset. And the wealth tax itself will be assessed only on those U.S. situs assets. But again, the carve-out is only for non-citizens, non-residents of the U.S., and non-residents is not defined.
Yeah. And of course, because it's a new, this is coming under a new subtitle altogether. So would, you know, given that there are different residents of different definitions of residence under subtitle one, the income tax, subtitle two, the estate and gift tax, and now this, who knows how residence might be defined.
That's correct. Sort of
thing. But, you know, that's a technical issue and we don't know the answer. But I think it's worth pointing out that effectively this has been downloaded to the Treasury to decide who's a resident. Who's a resident? Would you agree?
Yes. And you know, if the IRS wants to be really strict and have that net be very broad to get in as many people as possible, they can use multiple definitions for non-resident. They can use the income tax definition. They can use the estate tax definition in conjunction with it. We don't know. They could come up with some other rules, for example.
Or they could even say, have you ever visited the United States? If so, boom.
They could follow California. Did you spend more than 60 days in the U.S.? At any time in the past 10 years? If so, you are treated as a resident. We don't know what it's going to be.
And I think this is critically important. And this is another reason why, you know, I think that the governments of other countries need to be looking at this stuff, because this is not, in fact, an internal U.S. matter when they're defining, you know, what is really an extraterritorial wealth tax. Because even to the extent that it applies to U.S. citizens who've never lived in the United States, I mean, you know, I know that you in the past, or I believe you, your client base includes, you know, some moneyed families in the Gulf region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this type of stuff puts all of these, you know, brings all of these assets into the U.S. tax net. Okay.
Absolutely.
So what we've got here, so to put it another way, the assets of anybody who's defined as a U.S. citizen would be subject to this. Even if you're not a U.S. citizen, non-resident, okay, your U.S. assets could be subject to it.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about you made the point at the beginning that every year, all of the world must research and list all of their assets. All the world, can you imagine the new industry? Wealth tax reporting services. Now,
it's going to be a lucrative industry.
Well, what's fascinating about it is that although a lot of discretion is given to Treasury, that the discretion specifically includes tying the reporting to these existing information returns like 8938, you know, this stuff. And this is incredible, specifically references FATCA in two separate parts of this proposed bill as part of the reporting mechanism. So in other words,
they're going to be leveraging all of the data that they have and tying it all together and having, I believe, eventually, if it comes to the IRS issuing regulations to this effect, that foreign financial institutions, et cetera, may still be reporting about what this guy has in his account, what wealth he has, what stocks are in there in the brokerage accounts and so forth.
You know, I think that's exactly right. And if you look at the FATCA IGAs, I hadn't thought of this until this second, but I believe that the reporting requirements are based generally on Internal Revenue Code requirements, which is broad enough to bring all this stuff in. In other words, they may actually be able to leverage the FATCA IGAs.
They could.
Oh, too.
We don't know, but it's clear. It's clear that FATCA information is in the works to be used to enhance and further the ability of the U.S. to tax. And here we have a complete new regime, a wealth tax regime that they're looking at. So it's a domino effect, to my mind, John. The U.S., since 2010, let's say, since they put in FATCA, has now been growing its arsenal of information, dossier gathering, okay? And once the dossier is filled with this information, then they can easily come up with different taxes to impose on people that they have information about. And there's
right. And, you know, come back to... We sort of skated around the issue of the estate tax, but as we all know, For non-resident aliens, unless there's a tax treaty saying otherwise, you know, U.S. side is at over $60,000 would be subject to the U.S. estate tax.
That's correct. And in the old days, John, in the old days, I just want to point this out because this was changed significantly by FATCA. That requirement that U.S. situs assets, foreign individuals upon death, their estates have to pay tax on the U.S. situs assets, such as stocks, okay? Many, many foreigners had stocks, U.S. stocks in brokerage accounts in the U.S. And when they passed away, they were worth more than $60,000. Estate tax returns should have been filed and tax paid. It was never done. Okay, why? Because there was no way to really enforce it. But now with FATCA, all of the brokerage firms are afraid they will not release assets unless you present them, you know, upon the death of the owner of the account with a federal transfer certificate, some kind of clearance from the IRS that the estate tax issues have been taken care of. And this has all been because of FATCA. That's when these firms knew the noose was tightening and there's no way to escape it. So we see that as just one small example of how FATCA has enabled the US to really carry out its tax laws. And here with the wealth tax, if that comes into effect, I'm sure they're going to be leveraging FATCA, the IGAs, the leash they have around foreign countries to make sure they get the information they want.
That's right. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You know, in 2011, people would say FATCA is the gift that just keeps on giving. God, if you look at how far this has gotten and the unbelievable potential that this proposed wealth tax, just in terms of the way it's written, has to extract more and more information from the rest of the world. I mean, these European countries have got to realize this. From a practical point of view, I'm going to ask you a very simple question. If you had money to invest in the world, would you advise somebody or would you invest it in the United States if you were a non-citizen, non-resident?
Well, I would have an awful lot of concerns, okay? You'd want your tax plan to be rock solid, but I don't know, John. I don't really want to go there because everyone's situation is very, very different. I have clients that say, oh, I don't really care about the reporting. I have a great opportunity to earn money and I'll earn my money and I'll get out. So everyone's situation is so fact specific. I think it's difficult to paint a broad brush there. But I think the point we're trying to make with this wealth tax proposal is that people will not truly understand, like when FATCA came out in 2010, people did not understand really what that meant in terms of their privacy, their marriages to non-US people, how that would be impacted, and so on. And now, and certainly the poor, hapless, accidental American who doesn't have a social security number and is having his foreign bank account closed down and his mortgage closed out because he can't provide the information to the bank that shows he's been tax compliant and can complete his W-9 and so forth. Those guys will probably have a clearer picture of what this wealth tax is going to mean and how it will impact their lives. They thought FATCA was bad. Well, I think this is going to make things even worse at the end of the day. FATCA was just the beginning. And it's just a building block for the government, the U.S. government, to get more and more information and impose more and more taxes on overseas assets.
Sure. To put it another way, FATCA was really the pouring of the foundation of the house. And now all these other things are being added. FATCA not building the foundation for the house. FATCA was building the foundation for the prison. Because, if you look at this stuff cumulatively, I mean, it's simply shocking. I mean, this may sound abstract, but to give this a bit of reality, okay, a piece of real estate that's been in a European family for generations, it could easily be subject to this wealth tax. Imagine no connection to the United States whatsoever.
That's right.
Possibly because of marriage to a U.S. a person, a U.S. citizen. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I noticed that the legislation has interesting rules for, you know, determining whether somebody's subject to the threshold. And I think they make reference to what they call the marital unit, don't they?
That's right. What they are doing with this marital unit, it's very interesting. Married taxpayers are treated as what's called one applicable taxpayer. So it's a very interesting concept. If you are married to a non-resident, non-US citizen, are all of the assets owned by that non-US citizen, non-resident counted in the calculation of determining whether he is subject to this wealth tax? Because now the two of them are treated as one. So are all of the assets owned by the non-US side counted, or only if that person owns US assets?
Right.
So we don't know. That's not
correct. Can I ask you, I mean, this is a fascinating question with no clear answer. I wonder if I could ask you to consider this from two separate perspectives. First would be the issue of whether the assets are subject to the wealth tax. And the second would be, assuming that somebody is subject to the wealth tax, what are the assets the tax would be payable on? Sort of where I'm trying to go with this is, I think that if you're a non-resident, non-citizen, you're only paying the wealth tax on U.S. assets.
That's how I read this, absolutely. And that
would make sense. That doesn't mean necessarily that the way you look at the definition of the marital unit, that non-U.S. assets would be excluded from the calculation of the $50 million threshold. Do you think that?
It's not clear. It's right. It's not in there. It's not answered at all. It can go either way. It can go either way. But the other issue, John, that we have, even if putting that aside for the moment, is that many people live in a community property jurisdiction. So, you know, Denmark, Switzerland, many Latin American countries have community property regimes in place. And so what's owned by the non-US person is deemed under the laws of that jurisdiction to be owned 50-50.
Right.
So the US person will be treated as if he owns under the law of that country half of the asset. And the US has used that. I mean, they consider community property laws of other jurisdictions is, yes, well, then you own one half. We all know that from other areas of taxation. So the wealth tax will definitely be impacted by if you live in a community property regime.
It's absolutely shocking, or to put it in very practical, simple terms. I mean, a lot of people is maybe gobbledygook. How about I put it this way, and you can agree or disagree. Marriage to a U.S. citizen gotten much riskier and could potentially subject your assets to wealth taxes. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. Dangerous liaisons. Let's put it that way.
There's a phrase, living dangerously. So in this case, we call it marrying dangerously.
So true. So there's another very important aspect, John, that I think we should bring up before we, you know, I think kind of wrap up here, is that the people who are planning on expatriating or thinking about expatriating, they better hurry up. The reason that we say this is because if someone is treated as this horrible creature called a covered expatriate, and we know that being a covered expatriate is not a good thing. If you're treated as a covered expatriate, your wealth tax is going to be assessed on the day before you give up your citizenship or your green card if you're a long-term resident. And you will be taxed under the wealth tax at 40% of your net wealth.
So, sorry, you mean 4%. I thought that the other provisions was 2%. Surely you mean 4%. Four?
No, John. No. 40. 40%.
You've got to be kidding me.
No.
That's 20 times what somebody else who wasn't expatriating would be subject to. 40, 20 times two?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's shocking.
And if, you know, if you look at it, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. So this wealth tax really adds insult to injury, because the covered expatriate, as we know, can be a very innocent person who, let's take the accidental American, the most innocent of them all, who hasn't been filing tax returns, didn't know he was supposed to, etc. So that person can never certify under penalties of perjury that he's been U.S. tax compliant for the 5 years prior to expatriation. So that guy gives up his citizenship and is subject to the exit tax. So he has to pay that. And then he also has to pay 40% on his net wealth that is left over. Yep. And that's someone that is not, you know, a billionaire, a trillionaire. I mean, this is someone that is going to, as you mentioned, in Canada, he may have a house and he may have pension plans.
That's right. And this is not a non-realization event. In other words, this tax is doing, even though the person may not have a cent to his name.
That's right.
Unbelievable. You know, on this note, here's Senator Warren's statement recently from an interview. I'm just going to read you this particular synopsis, okay? I mean, you just can't make this up, okay? Here we go. Courtesy of Senator Warren. The idea behind wealth tax is that you have to pay it if you're an American citizen. It doesn't matter whether you live in Texas or California, or even whether you move to Europe or South America. If you want to keep your American citizenship, you pay the wealth tax, and it doesn't matter where you put your assets. You can try to hide them in the Cayman Islands. You can try to put them up in Switzerland. It doesn't matter. You still pay the 2 cent wealth tax. Actually, I don't think she understands her own tax, you know, with that description. But I mean, this is the mindset of these people. This is shocking.
Well, this is the problem, John. The mindset is that anyone that lives outside of the United States is somehow cheating on their taxes, hiding their money, putting it in the Caymans, putting it in Switzerland. Guess what? You know, Americans living and working in Switzerland, yes, they are keeping their money in a Swiss bank.
They're not putting their money in Switzerland. That's just where their money was. They're not putting it in Switzerland.
It's a normal part of their life. So we have many, many Americans abroad that keeping their money in a foreign bank is mandatory for them to live, to get their salaries paid in, to pay their mortgages and so forth. But the mindset, from what I've seen, having practiced now for over 35 years overseas, the mindset is that anyone that's overseas is somehow suspect and they're cheating somehow, and we have to flesh them out.
Absolutely. So, as I read in an article recently, I thought this was a great phrase. The author of the article called them, are you ready for this? Foreign living citizens. Think of that, foreign living citizens. You know, this is extraordinary, but you know what that excerpt tells me, what I just read, this is, I think, the problem here is that from the American point of view, from the American homeland point of view, mm-hmm. the only people these laws affect are Americans who start in America and move out of America. You know, what I would call the American expatriates, they don't even seem to understand the accidentals or immigrants, you know, people who left the United States at a young age permanently even exist.
That's correct.
And you know, so what in effect is happening is they're running a sort of a third kind of tax. You know, the United States has three tax regimes. You know, one, homeland Americans, two, non-resident aliens, and three, what I would call the extraterritorial tax regime, or people who are defined as U.S. citizens living outside the United States who really aren't. In any significant sense, it's absolutely shocking. Mm-hmm. Before we end this, I would add also, by the way, that, you know, you talked about the expatriation penalty. There are also penalties for dying. There are penalties for gifting things away. There is no escape from wealth tax. Okay.
That's right. Dying will not help you, nor will gifting your assets away, because these taxes will be imposed, the wealth tax will be imposed on the day before you've passed away. So you have to add up everything on the day before you died and pay the wealth tax then. So you pay the wealth tax, and by the way, don't think you're not going to pay the estate tax. That's a completely separate tax. So you've got two things going on.
Absolutely. I mean, all America is about is taxation. And when you think about this, they fought the Revolutionary War not to stop U.S. taxation, but to get the right to develop the most vicious, brutal, extraterritorial tax regime the world has ever known. That's what it was about.
Well, I don't think they were thinking of that back then, John, but...
Are you sure? I don't know. You never know with these people. I mean, no, it's... It reminds me of the same, you know, the old saying, the difficult we do today, we get rid of this benign British tax system, the impossible, imposing where we are, it takes a little longer. It may have taken a couple hundred years, but, you know, I mean, we're definitely there. I mean, you think the U.S. needs tax reform, Virginia?
I think they kind of need to blow up the code and start over, but.
I think that's exactly right. You know, before we
end here. It's become more and more complicated every time they try and amend.
Nobody can understand it. It's impossible to understand. It's absolutely impossible. The only thing that can be understood, if you read the Internal Revenue Code, every section, there's only one cluster of words that can reliably be understood. And that is, if you see the word foreign, the word penalty is sure to follow, usually starting at $10,000. That is reliable cluster of words throughout the, and everybody can understand that, but that's really the end of it. You know, you're going to be penalized for what? Who knows?
Right.
Before we end,
we've hit the main points here. Yeah. I think I'm looking back at my notes and I think we've covered everything. I'm going to be doing a tax blog post on this act in more detail. And I think you will also be writing up something. You've already written up an excellent piece for people that want to read up a little bit more on it. But I think the people that really need to start looking at things are the following groups. People that are married to a non-U.S. spouse. Yes, Americans married to a non-U.S. spouse. Anyone who's thinking of expatriating better move very quickly on their decision and take action. And as well, foreign investors into the United States need to know that they may be hit with a wealth tax on their US assets. So that's going to impact foreign investment, I believe, going into the States. And I'm, you know, think about people that are really interested in buying real estate in America, like shopping malls and, you know, luxury apartment buildings and this sort of thing, where that threshold of 50 million can quite easily be reached by people that are investing in those sorts of.
Well, not only that, Virginia, but we've talked about how these new rules are likely going to lead to increased enforcement of the general estate tax for non-resident aliens.
Oh, yes.
So, and
oh,
I think that's likely to affect even a larger number.
Yes.
But before closing here, tonight, Oprah is doing this interview of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Oh, yes.
Tell me, these laws have been in effect before the wedding. Do you think there might have been pressure on Meghan to expatriate?
That's a good question. I don't know. Well, she certainly didn't, did she? And now she's dragged Harry into the States.
That's right. So now Harry, unless there's an exception, presumably would meet the substantial presence test. Is Harry now, because he followed her to California, a U.S. person for tax purposes? What do you think?
Well, I think there's a really good chance he's already met substantial presence. So for income tax purposes, he would be a U.S. tax subject.
And oh my God, and think of the potential for the wealth tax imposed on Harry now.
And if he's treated as domiciled in the United States, which given all of the facts I know, stepping down from the royal duties, not having the home anymore in the UK, having the home in the United States and California, raising the family there, doing their deals there. They're just becoming more and more entrenched in America. I would say Harry has a very good chance that he's treated as domiciled in the US for estate tax purposes. And what that means is that all of his assets worldwide will be subject to US estate tax. So
it also gives him a larger exemption, but for a guy like that, the 3 million or 11 million, wherever, is not going to mean anything.
Not going to matter. And if the wealth tax comes into effect and he's treated as, you know, resident for that purpose, which given everything, there's a good chance he would be. Yes, he'll be paying an annual wealth tax. So
think of it. Absolutely extraordinary. You know, I think that they should have kept an ankle bracelet on Harry very, very early on. But anyway, this has been a fascinating discussion. I hope that the people see the seriousness of this. There's a tendency for people to say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't affect me. That may not, well, first of all, it's not the law today. Once it becomes the law, it's amazing how, you know, these thresholds get lowered, you know, to affect more and more people. So, you know, it really is ushering in a new form of taxation in America, namely taxation based not on income, but my God, you have an asset, you should be giving us something.
That's right. And let's not forget, this is the federal wealth tax. We are already seeing California proposing and New York, and I don't know which other states, but those are the two I'm aware of at the moment, that they have wealth tax proposals on the table as well. So this could be the new flavor of the year.
And exit taxes, you know, when you try to leave. You know, this is, you know, possibly this is also interesting. You know, Virginia, the 21st century, I think there's two things that are true. The first is the single most interesting person thing about a person is his or her tax residency. You know, number one. But the second is the greatest form of wealth in the 21st century is to be able to live happily on exactly nothing. Mm-hmm. That's what true wealth has become now with this. You know, why should people have to defend themselves 24/7 from these rapacious governments?
Yes, it's getting more and more difficult. I agree.
You think there could be a second American Revolution?
I are here to help. We're here to help and give them advice, and, you know, hopefully giving people the heads up will enable people to start taking action.
Especially on, you know, for people who don't live in the United States, the renunciation. As I've ended many podcasts, I think, would you agree with this statement? For Americans abroad not returning to the United States, all roads lead to renunciation.
Absolutely. For those who are saying, you know what, I'm not going back. My life is here in France or Germany or Dubai or wherever they are. If they want to have a life, then they've got to get out now. That's what I think.
I think you're 100% right. And I think I want to end on that note because you put it so well.
Well, thank you. I would also add, John, that if people are having trouble getting to their embassy or consulate in their country, because many of them have stopped actually carrying out expatriation services due to COVID-19 restrictions, I've been successful in getting my clients appointments at the U.S. consulate in Dubai. So if people need help and want to get to Dubai to try and renounce, we can certainly assist on that.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. So, I mean, they could even conceivably combine it as a vacation. You know, a number of years ago, I wrote a post called, I think things are better in the Bahamas, where I was sort of joking that, well, you know, I used to send people to NASA to renounce combined vacation mm-hmm. with expatriation. But, you know, Dubai is now an opportunity for that.
Yes, it is. And it's easy to get here. You know, you need the PCR test. You need your negative PCR certificate at the departure airport. Usually some countries you need both at departure airport and you need to be tested again when you get here. So people can check what are the actual requirements, but you know, we're still taking in tourists, and much of our population has already been vaccinated. UAE has done a fantastic job. So I have to say, you know, if people are looking for a place and they want to renounce and their embassy or consulate is closed because of COVID, we can start and see if we can help them out here in Dubai.
Well, I think that's important for people in Canada. I mean, I've flown Toronto to Dubai. It's a 10-hour flight. It's not much worse than, you know, flying to Europe, but that's great. And by the way, I should have asked you, what are your coordinates for listeners? How would they get in touch with you? What's your website?
The website is www.us-tax.org. And when they are in the website, they'll find all of my contact details, the email, phone, etc. And if they just Google my name, they're going to find me. I'm really all over the net.
Absolutely. One of the world's most prolific tax bloggers. And I think one of the very, very best. And, you know, reflects being with Virginia Latour-Jaeger, a U.S. tax lawyer based in Dubai, which reflects her 35 years of, I'm not even going to say experience, I would say extraordinary service to Americans abroad through her tremendous educational initiatives. And I thank you for that, Virginia. And I think that our listeners would echo my thanks. So,
thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Great stuff, Virginia.
My blog on this, it'll give more detailed information and we'll provide links to the actual proposal. And again, I think the most important thing is for people not to stick their head in the sand and for the people abroad to start looking at, am I married to a non-US person? What's that going to mean for me? Am I thinking of expatriating? Should I be thinking about it? My whole life is here in this foreign country. Our children are here. Our family's here. Our life is here. Do I want to remain a U.S. person?
Virginia, it's not a question of wanting, okay? People don't renounce because they want to. They renounce because they have to, you know, for all of the reasons that we're given. It's not an option anymore. The United States of America has completely destroyed the value of American citizenship. The reality is that U.S. citizenship is probably the only citizenship in the world where people have to renounce, you know, to be able to live a normal life. It's shocking.
I know.
And, that's a topic for perhaps another podcast. All right.
True.
Thanks, John. So much. This has been great.
Okay.